Today's daf is Erichin daf Ches. Let's start the second parak of Maseches Erichin. So the second parak begins and says the Mishnah and daf Zayin and Beis Ein Erachin Pachas Misela V'LeYisrael Chamishim Sela, that you can never have an Erech for less than one Sela, nor do you ever find that an Erech is ever for more than 50 Sela. Now, if you look through the parsha of Erichin in the Torah, you will find that there is no Erech that is as little as one Sela. There's no, based on gender and age, there's nobody that is valued at as little as one Sela, but there is a halacha that if a person is an ani, if the person is too poor to afford the true erech payment for what they owe, so they can give just a sela, and through that be yotzei their erech payment. Now, the most expensive erech is 50 sela. For a male in the prime of his life, that is 50 sela. So that's why you don't have any less than one sela, meaning no matter how poor a person is, if he gives less than one sela to satisfy an erech payment, that is as if he did nothing. That accomplishes absolutely zero. But if he gives one sela because he can't afford any more, then it's as if he has paid his entire erech vow, even if the true vow was something that was worth 50 sela. That is the halacha. So says the Mishnah Ketzad, Nasan sela v'heshir eino nosin klum. If a person gave a sela because he was poor, and then he became wealthy, so he doesn't have to give anything, because he already paid a sela. Pachos mi sela v'hashir, nosin chamishim sela. But if he paid less than a sela, and then he became wealthy, well, he hasn't accomplished anything yet by paying less than a sela, and therefore he still owes the entire erech vow of 50 sela, presuming that that was his original erech vow. Hayu b'yadav chamish shlo'im, but now we have machlokas tanoim. What about the following case? The man is poor, but not so poor that he only has one sela. He owes a 50 sela erech, but he only has to his name 5 sla'im. So do you say that, well, a poor person gives one sela, and therefore that's all he has to give? Or do you say, no, he has to give whatever he can afford, and in this case, he has 5 sla'im. So Rav Meir Omer Einu Nosin Ela Achas. Rav Meir says he only gives one sela in this case, V'chamim Omer Nosin Eskula, and the Chamim say, no, he has to give whatever he has, and therefore he gives all 5 sla'im. Ein Rachin Pachos Misela V'lo Yisrael Chamishim Sela, and then in case you forgot it from 3 lines ago, the Mishnah repeats that we never have an Erech of less than a sela, nor an erech of more than 50 sela. Obviously, the Gemara is going to deal with why we have that line in the Mishnah stated twice. It's both the first line of the Perek and the last line of this Mishnah. So, but we'll get to that later. Says the Gemara, "Ein erech and pachas misela min ola." And where do we find that there exists such a halacha that an erech payment of less than a sela never counts for anything? Dichsiv, because the pasuk says, "V'kol erkecha yeh b'shekel hakodesh." Now, Pasha Pshar in the Pasuk is that whenever you pay all these monetary amounts that the Torah requires for Erechin payments, should always be B'Shekel HaKodesh, should always be using the currency of Shekel HaKodesh. But we're darshaning from this Pasuk that called Erechin Shata Marich Lo Yupchusin Mishekel, that any time you give any sort of Erech, the minimum amount that could be meaningful as an Erech payment is a Shekel. Less than a Shekel could never be meaningful as an Erech payment. V'lo Yeser Al Chamishim Slayim D'Chsev Chamishim. Nor is it ever, could it be more than 50 sela, because the pasuk says chamishim, the pasuk says 50 sela is, and this is just pasuk pshatim psukim. If you look through the parsha of erechim and you look at what's the most expensive erech happens to be 50 shkalim. Fine, hayu b'yadav chamisha. So we had this machlokas tanoim in the Mishnah. What if you have 5 slaim? Do you give one sela for your erech, or do you give for your erech payment, or do you give all 5 slaim for the erech payment? So my time to a mayor, what's the reason for a mayor to say that you only give achas, that you only give one sela? Where does Rav Meir get that from? So as follows, k'siv chamishim u'k'siv shekel. On the one hand, the pasuk says that you give 50. On the other hand, the pasuk says you give shekel. So Rav Meir learns it as follows, o chamishim o shekel. You either give 50 or you give shekel. V'rabbanan ha'hula kal erichin shata marich lo yupchusim mishekel huda asa. The Rabbanan will say, no. What we learn from that pasuk is that whenever you make an erech vow, it should never be less than a shekel. But not that the only two options when you make an erech vow for someone who has an erech of 50 shkalim are either if you're rich you give 50 shkalim, or if you're poor you give 1 shekel. No, if you're poor but you have 25 shkalim to your name, so you give 25 shkalim. You have 5 shkalim, you give 5 shkalim. All the pasuk is teaching me is that less than a shekel is never acceptable. Hecha de isle, but if you have more than a shekel, amar krash, tasig yad anoder, v'arei yodom ha-segas. Well, the pasuk says you have to give what you can afford. And if you could afford 5 shekelim, give 5 shekelim. You could afford 6 shekelim, give 6 shekelim. Whatever it is that you can afford, even though it's less than the full erech payment that you really owe. So long as it's more than 1 shekel, as long as it's at least 1 shekel. But it's not 1 shekel or 50 shekel. It's anything that you can afford, so long as it's more than 1 shekel. If Rabbi Meir, a Meir would respond, "Ahu yad anoder v'lo yad hanider hu da'asa." That pasuk asher tasig yad anoder is to come to teach me that the Torah, although it's somewhat unclear when the Torah describes who is poor in the situation where you're giving 1 shekel, so one might have read the pasuk in the Torah. It just says that a person who's poor, a person who doesn't have the amount of money necessary to pay the full erech, the person that he doesn't have lo tasig yado, he doesn't have a serious amount of money, then you give 1 shekel. But the Torah never said who the he is. One might have thought that the ne'erach in this situation is the he. That if I say I'm going to give the erech of someone who happens to be very poor, then I only owe a shekel. That's what I might have thought the pasuk meant. So that's why it says asher tasig yad hanoder. That no, the question of how wealthy the person is affecting the payment is a question of how wealthy the noder is, not how wealthy the person about whom the neder was made. Now it's pashut to us, but it may not have been so pashut had we not had this pasuk, that it all relates to the person making the payment. His financial situation is what determines whether he gives a shekel or whether he gives the full erech payment. Rabbi Meir, so that's what Rabbi Meir says. That's what the pasuk asher tasig yad anoder is coming to teach me. Not that you give whatever you can afford, but that the person whose financial situation we look at is the noder and not the nidar. V'lo yad anidar udas. Rabbanan would say, you're right. That pasuk does teach us that we look at the noder's financial situation. That if he can afford a little bit more, so then you pay whatever he pays whatever he can afford. It's telling me that we look at the financial situation of the noder, and if the financial situation of the noder dictates that he could afford 5 shekelim, so let him pay 5 shekelim. Who says that he pays only 1 shekel? Fine, that is the machlokas Rav Meir and the Chacham. Says the Gemara, Amar Avad Barava, Hayu biyad of chamesh slaim. Let's say a guy has 5 slaim to his name. Va'amar erki olai, v'chazer va'amar erki olai. So he makes 2 separate eruchin vows for his own erech. Let's say his own erech is 50 shekelim, but he was mechayiv himself twice, 2 separate vows. V'nasan arba l'shniya ve'echad rishona, and he gives 4 shekelim to the second guy, and 1 shekel, not to the second guy, 4 shekelim for the second vow, and 1 shekel for the first vow, his very last shekel for the first vow. So really, the first vow should have come first, and the second vow comes second. This is like a person who owes money to Reuven and Shimon, right? Let's say you borrow $100 from Reuven on January 1st and $100 from Shimon on February 1st. So really, by all rights, Reuven has the ability to collect first because he's the one that lent you money first. Still, in this situation where you paid Shimon most of the money first, and then you paid Reuven a little bit, Yatzi Deishtei, and the person over here, of course, we're not dealing with Reuven and Shimon, we're dealing with giving money to the Beis HaMikdash, giving money to Bet HaKabayis through the Erechin vow, but it parallels that kind of case. Yatzi Deishtei, and the person is Yotze both of his Erechin vows. My time, why is he Yotze? Because the halacha is, by a Reuven and Shimon case, if Shimon comes and collects first, so his collection is a valid collection. Reuven can't come and say, no, you owe me that money, and I'm going to confiscate it from Shimon. He cannot confiscate it. Shimon's collection is a valid collection. But you had every right to not give the all 5 shekelim for the second erech vow, because all of that money was really meshubad to the first erech vow, and therefore all that money really belonged in the hands of to pay off the first erech vow. So that's why we don't say that you fell short of your commitment by paying only 4 shekelim to the second erech vow, because the second erech vow has to recognize that there already is a shibud kibbut in the first Erech Le'anu. Of course, this whole discussion is only within the Shita of the Chachamim, that you pay the full value of what you have and not just one shekel to get away with the bare minimum. Even though you don't have the full 50 shekel for each vow, you would pay whatever you have. So your Yotze, the second Erech vow, because Klape, the second Erech vow, there has to be a recognition that there exists an earlier shibud, and therefore you don't have to give all five shkalim to the second erech vow. By the time you get around to paying the first erech vow, all you have left is one shekel. Be'inna diav l'rishona, suleslay, at the time that you're paying the first erech vow, you have nothing else to pay than that shekel, and therefore you're yotzei with the bare minimum of one shekel. Nasa, so that's case number one. Nasan arba l'rishona v'achs l'shnia, but let's say in this case you gave four shkalim for the first erech vow and only one shekel for the second erech vow. So then yidei shnia yatzu, you yotze the second erech vow, because by the time you paid the second erech vow, all you had is one shekel, so you paid whatever you had, but yidei rishona lo yatzu, but you're not yotze the first erech vow, because you should have, in order to be yotze your first erech vow, you should have given all that you had for it, according to the Chachamim, and you didn't. You only gave four out of the five shkalim, meaning unlike in the previous case where you paid the second erech vow first, paying four shkalim satisfied the requirement over there, because the second erech vow has to recognize that there's an earlier shibud in the first erech vow. Over here, the first erech vow has the full shibud of the five shkalim, and paying any less than the five shkalim would be a non-fulfillment of the erech vow that the person made. Kulu mishabdun l'rishona, all of it was in fact mishubud to the first vow. By Rav Ada Barava raised the following shaila. Now, it happens to be, just to point out over here, the Rashi writes, in this situation where you gave four for the first Erech Vow, one for the second Erech Vow, that you weren't Yotzei the first Erech Vow because you were mechuyev to pay all five shkalim, and therefore, if you become wealthy later on, you would have to give the entire first Erech Vow. Now, the entire payment, the entire 50 shekel, if a person becomes wealthy later on, he would owe the entire 50 shekel of the first Erech Vow. Now, says the Yimrei Bina, from Rashi it sounds that you would have to pay, let's see, I already paid four shkalim for the first Erech Vow, but that was deemed insufficient, so how much more money do I owe for the first Erech Vow? So I would have said I owe 46 more, so you give 46 shkalim when you become rich. Says the Imre Bina, it sounds from Rashi that you would give the full 50 again, that the first four that you gave were worthless. It means absolutely nothing. It's like trying to do the mitzvah of Pidyon HaBen by giving one shekel today, another shekel the next day, another shekel the next day. It doesn't work. You need to give all, whenever there's a shear of how much you have to give the shear all at one time. And by giving four, you haven't been yotzei anything, so you have to give all 50 at one time. That is Shitas Rashi, says the Imre Bina. However, the Rambam in Erechon V'charam Paragimel Aloch Yir Aleph seems to say against Rashi. The Rambam writes, if you give nine shkalim for the first Erech Vow, and then one for the second Erech Vow, you yotzei the second Erech Vow, because you gave all that you've got, and it was at least it met the bare minimum of a shekel, but you're not yotzei the first Erech Vow, sharei kol ma shehaya biyado mishubud l'rishona. Everything that you had was meshubah to that first Erech Vow. Kisha nasan hatesha nishar lo sela. When you gave the nine shkalim, there was still a sela left. Varei lo nasan kol masha yado maseges. You didn't give all that you could afford to the first Erech Vow. Lefichach, here's the key line in the Rambam, yishar alav shar Erech Rishon. What remains on you, the obligation that remains on you, is the remainder, shar erech rishon, the remainder of the first erech, which in this case would be 46 more shkalim, not the full 50. That seems to be a machlokas rishon, a machlokas Rashi and the Rambam. Says the Gemara next case, by Ravad, the three lines on the top on daf chesam and al, by Ravad Barava, hay biyadu chamish la'im v'amar shnei arki alai bebasachas mahu. What if the person has five sla'im, and instead of taking one erech vow and then another erech vow, he takes two erech vows simultaneously. He says, shnei erki alai at the same time. So what's the din? Kivan de bebas achas, Kivan de Babas Achas Nadar ki had ki adodi tafson yav tarti upal galahai vitarti upal galahai, do we say that since he made both nadarim at the same time, so they're both tofes equally, and therefore the five shkolim are split amongst the two. So 2.5 of the shkolim are meshubad to one erech vow, and the other 2.5 shkolim are meshubad to the other erech vow, and he can satisfy both by giving 2.5 shkolim to each. O Dilmor, maybe no. Kulu chazi lahai, the kulu chazi lahai. Maybe the five shkolim are completely meshubad to each of the erech vows, and therefore the best he can do in this situation is satisfy one of the erech vows by paying all five shkolim toward it. The other erech vow will remain unsatisfied until he makes a little more money and either pays it in full, or as an ani, pays one additional shekel. But the only way he's going to satisfy either of these erech vows is by paying all five shkolim toward one of them. So that is the shayla. How do we view it? Is it a chiv of 2.5 for each, or is it a chiv of 5 for each of is it a chiv that all five are meshuba to each of them, and therefore he needs to give all five to one of them, and then hope he makes more money in the future to satisfy the other. So Teiku, the Gemara leaves that unresolved. It's interesting, when the Rambam quotes this case, the Rambam alters it just a little bit. In Parag Gimel, Alach Yud Beis, of Arachim V'Charamim, the Rambam gives a case where the guy doesn't have enough money to satisfy both Erech vows. But the Rambam discusses a case, sounds like he's discussing a case, where the guy does have enough money to satisfy one of the erech vows, meaning from the case of the Rambam, it's as follows. The guy says, I'm going to give, at the same time, bebas achas, he accepts upon himself a double erech, right? Double erech vow. So let's say it's 50 shkolim for each. And the guy has 54 shkolim to his name, let's say. He has 54 shkolim to his name. So the shaila of the Gemara, therefore, is, does he give 27 shekel to each vow and thereby satisfy both? Or does he give 50 shekel to one vow and 4 shekel to the other vow and owe the remaining 46 to the other vow and fulfill the first vow by giving the full 50 right away? That's the case that the Rambam formulates in discussing our mission. I would have thought if he has, let's say, that number, if he has 51 shkolim or 54 shkolim, that of course he could be yotzei both, 50 shkolim to the one and then give like an ani, whatever he got left, to the other one. But no, the Rambam says since there's a shibur already at the time that he made the vow for all 50 shkolim, he cannot satisfy it by just giving whatever he has in his pocket. Now it could be in the future when he makes another shekel, he's only going to have one shekel to his name, and that one shekel is therefore going to suffice. But whatever he already has in pocket is not going to suffice as an ani. Okay, says the Gemara, Vaiter. Ein ba'arachin pachs miselav lo yes. So the Mishnah repeated the same line twice. So frek the Gemara, sulamli, why does it have to tell me the same line twice? Haka mashmalan, this is the Chiddush. Pachus miselahu deleka, hayesel sela ika, that you never have a payment of less than a sela, but sometimes you'll have a payment of more than a sela, even though it doesn't fully satisfy your erech vow, meaning even though it doesn't fully meet the requirement of your erech vow, but still that will suffice, la halacha, because you don't have enough money to pay your full erech vow. Yesrael chamishum hu deleka, pachus mi chamishum ika. Sometimes you can't pay more than 50, but less than 50 will be enough. Ustama k'rabanan, and stama we assume like the rabbanan. So meaning that the last line of the Mishnah is to tell me not to assume like Rabbi Meir, that it's either the full erech payment or if you can't afford that, one. No, not necessarily that way. It's the full erech payment or whatever you can afford. It's not necessarily one. If you have 5, so pay 5. If you have 10, you pay 10. Whatever it is that you're able to afford. Fine. That is the end of the analysis of the first Mishnah. Now, these next couple of Mishnahs are going to continue in the theme of that you never have more than X or less than Y. But it has nothing to do with Erechin. And this next Mishnah is going to be about Nida and Ziva, and then we're going to have about Mila. It's going to be a series of Mishnayos about never having more than X or less than Y. So in order to understand this Mishnah, we need to have a little bit of background information about Nida and Ziva. There is a halacha midah oraita. Now, midah rabbana, nowadays, none of the halachas we're about to discuss are nogea. The halacha is nowadays, as Gemara Nida reports, that Amar Rabbi Zeira, Benos Yisrael, Lechmir, Alatzman, Shafil, Rose, Tibasam, Kechardel, Yoshua, Sala, Shuvanaki. And that nowadays, a woman sees even a tiny drop of uterine blood, even just once, so she will not be tahora unless she has a full Shiva Nakiyim. That is the halacha as we know it nowadays. That is not the halacha midaoraisa. Now it is, and even though it sounds like it's only a minhag and a chumra, the Gemara Maseches Bracha says that when you daven, a person should always einom din l'spalel el mitoch kovid rosh. A person should only daven out of a sense of kovid rosh, out of a sense of el mitoch halacha psuka. Rather, the Gemara says that a person should only daven out of a clarity of mind, where he's not completely caught up in some sugya, where his mind is racing. A person should always daven with clarity in his head. So the best thing to do right before davening is just to learn, not to learn a complicated sugya, just learn a halacha psuka. Bottom line, something that's undebatable. So the Gemara says, "My halacha psuka." What's an example of that? So Gemara Bracha says, that Benos Yisrael Chmir Alatzman Shafil Rose Tibus Tam Chadul Yoshua Sala Shavin Nakiim. That's halacha psuka. What point is the Gemara trying to make by saying that that's halacha psuka? The Gemara is trying to tell us that even though it's a significant chumra that the Benos Yisrael were machmir on, it's something unquestionable. We don't question that chumra. It's widely accepted. We never compromise on that chumra. But that is all midirabbanan. On a d'oraisa level, the halacha is as follows. A woman sees dam, she becomes a nida. How long does she see dam? It doesn't matter whether she sees dam for 1 day, 2 days, 3, 4, 5, 6, up until 7 days straight of seeing dam, she is a nida for 7 days. That means if she saw dam for just 1 day, she's a nida that day plus 6 more days. She saw dam for 2 days, she's a nida those 2 days plus 5 more days. She sees dam for 6.5 days, she's a nida for those 6.5 days plus another half a day. Then she goes to the mikveh and she is tahora from being a nida. As soon as she is tahora from being a nida, the yud aleph yom shebe nida l'nida begin. The 11 days during which she is eligible to become a zava now begins. During those 11 days that she is eligible to become a zava, if she sees dam on one of those days, she's what's called a zava katana, which means shomeris yom keneged yom. She's only tame for that day, and on the next day she makes sure that there is no more dam, and then she is tahora. If she sees dam for 2 of those days consecutively, she is tameya for those 2 days, and she's shomeris yom keneged yom on the 3rd day to make sure she doesn't see any more dam, and she is tahora. However, if she sees dam for 3 consecutive days during the Yemei Ziva, she becomes a Zava Gedola. At that point, as a Zava Gedola, she now needs Shiva Nakim. She is going to be Temeya until she has 7 consecutive days where she doesn't see any dam. If after she goes through those 7 consecutive days without seeing any dam, then she can go. Then next time she sees dam afterwards, she'll go to the mikvah, she'll be tahora, and next time she sees dam afterwards, it will begin her yemei nida again. Fine, that is the basic halacha midah oraisa, at least lefi shitas Rashi. Shitas Rambam we're not going to get into. Let's just say it's much more it's on a certain level the shitas Rambam is simpler in terms of doing calculations, but much more complicated to fit into all the sugyas and shas, particularly in our sugya. So we're going to leave out shitas Rambam. We're going to stick with shitas Rashi. So says the Mishnah, given that background, let's say a woman sees dam and she's not sure, she completely lost cheshbon what her yemei nida were, her yemei ziva, whether she saw dam during her yemei nida, which would make her tameya for that day plus 6 more, or during the yemei ziva, which would make her tame only for that day plus another day, or if she saw, if she sees dam, let's say, for 3 days in a row, she has no idea whether she saw dam for 3 days during the Yemei Ziva, which would make her a Zava Gedola, or during the Yemei Nida, which would mean she only needs 4 more days, or some combination of the Yemei Ziva and the Yemei Nida. She has no idea. So, in order to clarify things and get her back on track to know for sure that she's in the Yemei Nida, Ein Pesach B'Toa, Pachos Mishiva, Velo Yeser al Yud Zayin. in order to clarify things, you will never need less than 7 days to clarify. You will always need at least 7 days. V'lo yeser al yud zayin. But you will never need more than 17 days straight of not seeing dam in order to assure herself that the next time she sees dam, it's the yamei nida and not yamei ziva, and get herself back on track. So the Brisa is going to elaborate and explain how that works out. Tanu Rabban, we have a Brisa. Let's say a woman says, I saw one day dam, but I don't know whether he's yamei nida or yamei ziva. Pischa shiva asar. She's going to need 17 straight days of not seeing dam in order to know for sure that the next time after that she sees dam is yamei nida. How do we figure 17? Because we assume worst case scenario. In this situation, worst case scenario was she saw dam and that was dam nida, so she's tameya for an additional 6 days. Then she has 11 more days of yamei ziva. Once those days are over, now she's eligible to become a nida again. So the six additional days right after she saw, plus the 11 days of yamei ziva, is a total of 17 days. So if she goes through those 17 days without seeing any dam, she can now be sure that she's back into her yamei nida. Shnei yamim tamei reisi. Let's say she says, I saw dam for 2 days. Pischa shiva asar. Again, 17 days. Why 17? Shouldn't we say that if she saw dam for 2 days, she only has 5 days of yamei nida left plus 11? Shouldn't that be 16? No, what we assume is, we assume the absolute worst. The absolute worst in this case would be that the first day that she saw dam was the last day of the Yud Aleph Yom of the yamei ziva. Second day that she saw dam was the first day of the yamei nida, which means she has how many days of yamei nida left? 6, plus the 11 that follow of yamei ziva. So 6 plus 11 is 17, and then she can be sure that the next time she sees dam is tchilas nida. Shloshi yamim tamei reisi. If she says, I saw dam for 3 days in a row, again, pischa shivasar. She needs to wait a minimum of 17 days, because we assume the worst, which is that the first 2 days that she saw were the last 2 days of yamei ziva. The third day that she saw was the first day of yamei nida. Now she has 6 more days of yamei nida, plus 11 days of yamei ziva, and that will give her 17. And then she can be sure that after that, whatever she sees dam is dam nida. Arba yam tamirisi. But if she says, I saw dam for 4 days in a row, pischa shisha asar, then she has to assume she only needs 16 days. Why? Because what are we going to assume? Let's assume she saw, if you were to assume that she saw 3 days in a row, the first 3 days that she saw were all during the yamei ziva, well then she'd be a zava gedola, and the yamei nida do not begin again until she has shiva nikiyim. So she would only really need shiva nikiyim in that case. So that is not assuming the worst. Assuming the worst would mean that she saw, the first two days that she saw were during yamei ziva, the next 2 days that she saw were during yamei nida. She needs how many more days of yamei nida? Only 5 more days of yamei nida, plus 11 days of yamei ziva. That's a total of only 16 days. Chamisha yam tamei reisi. She says she saw for 5 days in a row. Again, we assume that the first 2 days were yamei ziva, the next 3 days were yamei nida, which means she only has 4 more days of yamei nida, plus 11 days of yamei ziva, which is 4 plus 11, pischa chamisha asar. That's why she has 15 days that she has to go without seeing dam in order to get herself settled and back on track. Shisha yam tamei reisi. She says, I saw dam for 6 days in a row. So again, what do we cheshbon? The first 2 days are the last of 2 days of yamei ziva. The next 4 days are the first 4 of yamei nida, which leaves her with 3 more yamei nida plus 11 yamei ziva. A total of pischa arba asar, 14. Shiva yam tamei reisi. If she says, I saw dam for 7 days in a row, pischa shlosha asar. Then we assume if she saw for 7 days in a row, we assume the first 2 were yamei ziva, the next 5 were yamei nida, which leaves 2 more yamei nida plus 11 yamei ziva. That's a total of 13 days. Shmona yamim tamei reisi. If she says she saw for 8 days in a row, so again, the first 2 of those days we assume were yamei ziva, the next 6 were yamei nida, which leaves only 1 more yamei nida plus 1 more yom of nida plus 11 yamei ziva. 1 plus 11, pischa shneimasar, leaves her with 12 days. Tishri yam tamei reisi. If she says I saw dam for 9 days in a row, so again, the first 2 days were yamei ziva, the next 7 days were yamei nida. So how much does she have left? Only pischa chadasar. She only has 11 days left. Asari yamim tamei reisi. Let's say she says, I saw dam for 10 days in a row. So what do we assume? The first two of those days were yamei ziva. The next seven were yamei nida. The next one, the last day, was the first day of the next cycle of yamei ziva, which leaves her with only 10 more yamei ziva. So pischa asara, she only needs 10 more days. Achad asara, she says she saw dam for 11 days in a row. So again, first 2 days, yamei ziva. Next 7 days, yamei nida. Last 2 days are the first two of the next cycle of Yimei Ziva, which means she has how many days of Yimei Ziva left? Only 9. Pischa Tisha. That's why she has 9 more days to make sure that she doesn't see Dam, and then she's ready to be certain that the next Dam she sees is Dam Nida. Let's say Shnei Masar. She says that she saw Dam for 12 days in a row. So now Pischa Shmona. She's only going to need 8 more days, because you assume the first 2 days were Yimei Ziva, the next 7 more Yimei Nida, and now the next 3 are Yimei Ziva. She's Zava Gadol, she's going to require Shiva Nekiyim, obviously, but to make sure that the next Dam she sees is Yimei Nida, she needs to go through 8 days of not seeing any Dam. Shlosha Asar, let's say she sees Dam for 13 days in a row, Pischa Shiva. Then she's going to need Shiva Nekiyim, and that's it. She just has to close out the Yimei Ziva with seven clean days. Fine. She'ein Pesach b'toa pachs mi'shiva v'lo yesral shiva asr. You don't have anything less than 7 days, nor more than 17 days to get herself straightened out. So Rav Ada Bar Ava heard that brisa, and he was not familiar with the details with what the brisa was trying to get at. He thought the brisa was trying to say, was trying to make it that this woman should be muteris labayla again. But that is in fact not what the brisa was trying to do. So Amalei Rav Ada Bar Ava, the brisa was trying to make it that she should know the next time she sees dam whether it's yimei nida or yimei ziva. The brisa to make her muteris labayla, you could always just say have shiva nekiyim, and then of course she's muteris labayla, because if she's a nida, she doesn't even need shiva nekiyim. She just needs 7 days total. Doesn't even have to be 7 clean days if she's a zava gadola. So good, have 7 clean days, and that would be enough. So you would never need more than 7 clean days to make her muteris labayla. The whole kunz of the brisa was to try to make it that she doesn't have to, that she now knows her cheshbin, that she now knows whether she's in yimei nida or yimei ziva. But Rav Ada Bar Ava didn't chap that at first. Amalei Rav Ada Bar Ava l'rabba lamali kulehay timni shiva v'tishri. Just let her count shiva nekiyim and let her be good. So amalei litkuna li de nida upischa karmina. No, that's not good enough. We're trying to make it that she's good. We're trying to make it that she knows when yimei nida are and when yimei ziva are. Not just that she'll be muteris l'bayla. Tana Rabban, we have Braisa. Kalato Zavos Mavios Karban Ven Nechal. Anyone who makes a mistake about her Ziva will bring a Karban, but the Karban will not get eaten. Chutz mi Pischa Shiva Pischa Shmona Shemavios Karban Ven Nechal. Except for a woman who needs 7 days or 8 days to clarify her situation. In those cases, she would bring a Karban and the Karban would get eaten. So, frankly, more what? Atu Kalato Zavos Vesu Yom Echad Vishnei Yom Basu Suya Karban Hi. Does that make any sense that a woman who is not sure about her Yimei Ziva and she bleeds for 1 day or 2 days, she would bring a karban? No, only if you're a Zava Gadola you bring a karban. So why would any woman who stam is not sure whether her bleeding was during Yimei Nida or Yimei Ziva, why in the world would she bring a karban? Ella, rather, no, what we meant to say is as follows. Kol Zavos Hatos Mevius Karban Venu Nechal. Any woman who bleeds for 3 days in a row is going to have to bring a karban, because if she doesn't know whether it was Yimei Nida or Yimei Ziva, because there's a chance that she was a Zava Gadola. So she's going to have to bring karban. But you don't eat the karban. The karban does not get eaten unless she's certain that she was a Zava Gadola. The only situations that we discussed in this brisa where she is certain she must be a Zava Gadola is if she saw for 12 or 13 days consecutively. Because if she saw for 12 or 13 days consecutively, there's no way for her not to be a Zava Gadola. Think about it. If she saw, let's say, the first 2 days she saw were the last days of the Yimei Ziva, could that did not make her a Zava Gadola? Because it was only 2 days of Yimei Ziva. Then the 7 days were Yimei Nida. Still does not make her a Zava Gadola, because it was all during Yimei Nida. But still, if she saw for 12 days consecutively, it means that the following 3 days which were all during the Yimei Ziva, she also saw dam. So in that case, she's Vadai Zava Gadola. And obviously, if she sees for 13 days in a row, she's Vadai Zava Gadola. So in those cases, she would not only bring carbon, the carbon would get eaten. But in any of the other situations where she saw dam for 3 days or more, meaning if she saw dam for 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, or 11 days, she might be a Zava Gadola, but she might not be. And therefore, she brings a carbon, but the carbon does not get eaten. Okay, new mission now. Ein b'negoim pachos mishvua echad v'lo yesal shlosha shavuos. We don't find by negoim that there's ever anything less than 1 week, nor more than 3 weeks. This is talking about the halacha of hesker. Sometimes when a negat sara'as comes to a kohen, the kohen is unable to immediately paskin tahar or tameh, so the kohen says we have to close it up for a week, we have to put into confinement for a week, and then we'll reassess the situation. So such a confinement period is never less than 1 week. By a person, it's either going to be 1 week or 2 weeks, and never more than 3 weeks. By a bias, it could be as much as 3 weeks of hesker. So says the Gemara, pachos mishvua nigei adam. We said that it can't be less than 1 week, because nigei adam, which have the lesser confinement periods, it's a minimum of 1 week. V'lo yesra shlosha shavuos, it can never be more than 3 weeks. When do we ever have a 3 week confinement? That's, you know, 1 week at a time, but up until 3 weeks of confinement, that's nigei batim. That's by tzara'as on a home. Amrav Papa, so Rav Papa says, Tzidkascha karei el elu nigei adam, when we say that the righteousness of God is like a mighty mountain, that's a reference to nigei adam, that's a reference to the negaim on a person, because we see Hashem is so kind to us that he only makes the hesker for 1 week and not for the maximum amount. Mishpatecha tahom rabba elu nigei batim. But when we say that God's judgment is the great depths, meaning that it's very difficult to bear God's judgment, that's a reference to nigei batim, because nigei batim could have a hesker of up until 3 weeks. Chaim Shmulevitz in the famous Musar Shmuz says, wait a second, isn't nigei batim, doesn't that make it worse for nigei batim? Because if you're saying that it could be up until 3 weeks for nigei batim, you're saying that, doesn't that make it better for nigei batim? Because there's still a chance it might be tahora, it might be tahar, but by nigei adam, it might be, we'll declare it tamei right away, we'll declare it tamei earlier on. So says V'chaim Shulevitz, yeah, you'll declare it tamei, but a definitive declaration of tumah is better news for a person than an uncertainty of whether something is tamei or tahar, because there is nothing as difficult and challenging for a person to go through in life as uncertainty. If a person has certainty, then they're going to be, ultimately, they're going to be much more comfortable and much happier. It's only when there's uncertainty that people really struggle the most. So even certainty with bad is better for a person than having sfeikos and not knowing what the future actually holds. Now it is interesting, Rashi writes that the tzedakah over here is by nigei adam, is that you only have one shavua, to determine, 1 week, to determine whether the taher or lechalit, whether it's taher or tamin, that's a great tzedakah. But nikei batim, 3 weeks, and therefore it's a great mishpat, it's a great judgment. So in the Maisa Choshev, he asked the question, and in the Medrash it says that initially, when God wants to punish us, he'll bring negaim into our houses. And only if we don't do tshuva will the negaim hit us directly. So it seems that the onish of nigei adam is more chamur than nigei batim. So why is it that when a comes to being mevara the nega, the Torah is more makil by nigei adam than it is by nigei batim? Nigei adam is a more severe punishment. So the Marsha explains that the Gemara really means to say the opposite of what Rashi says. Tzidkascha karei el means nigei adam, which means to say that a Kodesh Baruch Hu does a tzedakah through nigei adam by not bringing nigei adam, by not giving us nigei adam, and he doesn't let out his anger by causing us nigei adam. Adraba, instead he brings nigei batim. But mishpatecha tom rabba, nevertheless there is a certain chumra even in nigei batim. In that, we don't have the Hataras HaSveikos, that the Sveikos are going to last for a long time. So based on the Marsha's interpretation, the Kasha is not really a Kasha. Anyway, so says Gemara, Pashti Dukra B'Maksiv. Yeah, but I mean, this is a nice vart in what these Pesukim might be referring to. But what's the Pasha Pshat? It says, Kaska Kariel Mishpatecha Tom Rabba. What's the Pasha Pshat of the Pasuk? So Amar Rav Yehuda, Il Malit Sit Kaska Kariel, Mi Yuchalamod Lefnei Mishpatecha Tom Rabba. It had not been for God's immense righteousness and kindness, who would be able to withstand God's incredible justice? Rabba Amar Tzidkaska Kari El Mipnei Shemishpatecha Tom Rabba. Now that God's righteousness is so great because of the Mishpat and the Tahom Rabba. So B'maikam, what are they arguing about? B'drablaz of Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina. They're arguing about the Machlokas of Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina, who both agree that when our sins equal our zechuyos, equal our mitzvahs, both Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina and Rabbi Lazar agree that God sort of sways the judgment in our favor. He cheats for us to let our mitzvahs outweigh our averos when really they're even. But they argue about what the method of God cheating for us is. The Itmar Rabbi Lazar Amar Kovesh, Rabbi Lazar says, Hashem takes some of our averos and hides them under his Kisei HaKavod, and therefore we're left with more mitzvahs than there are averos on the scale. Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina Amar Nosei. Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina says no, that he lifts it up, that by lifting the side of the averos up as if it were lighter, and the other side of the scale with the mitzvos goes down lower and makes it outweigh the side of the averos. So Rabba Kirab Lazar, Rabbu says Kaska Kariel Mipnei Shemishpatechatom Rabba, assumes like Rabbi Lazar, who says that Hashem hides some of our averos under his kisei. So that's why, where is the tzedakah? Because mishpatecha tom rabba, he sticks the mishpatim, he sticks our averos underneath his kisei. And Rabbi Yehuda says, no, says, who would be able to withstand the mishpat had it not been for tzidkaska kareel, assumes Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina, that Hashem actually lifts up the averos on one side of the scale, so that the other side will be weighed down with mitzvos, and that way we will come out victorious. But either way, both seem to assume that even though things are really even in terms of our averos and our mitzvos, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will rig the system in order to make it that we win, in order to make it that we are able to have more mitzvos, or make it appear as if we have more mitzvos than we do averos. Okay, Be'ez Hashem, tomorrow we will pick up with the Mishnah on the bottom of Daf Chesam and Beis.